Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri podcast by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
It's definitely springtime or heading into springtime in New Hampshire, but my snow shovel still is at a ready and the snow tires are still on the car and they're going to stay on for at least several more weeks and maybe longer. I know from sad experience that if I think that I know better than Mother Nature when spring is here and put that shovel away, Mother Nature's going to teach me a lesson with a late winter storm. But be that as it may, there's no doubt that there's increased activity in the animal community. This occurs because their activity level is pegged to the length of days, more so than the temperature and whatever happens to fall out of the sky. And it's at this time of year that I become particularly aware of how amazingly energy efficient animals are. We humans talk a lot about energy efficiency. And lately we've been talking about it more than ever because we're having to live with all kinds of consequences of our lack of energy efficiency. Had we paid more attention to what animals are doing and how they do it, that probably wouldn't be that much of an issue. In science, the word elegance used to be used, although I haven't heard it recently. Elegance in science, or scientific elegance, referred to doing a study and getting results that were so simple, so obvious, so adaptable to different circumstances, that they functioned sort of like that perfect little black dress that a woman can dress up or down for any occasion, or that suit or sports coat and a pair of slacks to which a guy could do the same thing. Lately in science, as in other areas, there seems to be a tendency to make things more and more complex, as if this will somehow prove that the individuals who are doing this are somehow more superior than the common folk. Animals don't have to worry about that. They don't have to worry about certifications or degrees or impressing people with their knowledge and their long equations and their big words and all that kind of stuff. All they have to do is get the job done using the least amount of energy. One place where this is very obvious is in the way animals use their teeth. Currently, we live in a society where some individuals feel that any use of their teeth by animals, except to eat what that person considers acceptable, is forbidden. It's wrong. It's a behavioral problem. What these people don't realize is that animals use their teeth to communicate. Not being bipeds like we are, not being hampered by the loss of a sense of smell that enables precise communication and thus having to develop a verbal language. Animals also don't have an opposable thumb. And so many times they use their teeth not only to communicate, but they also use their teeth the way we use our hands. And many times the message that they communicate is stimulus driven. So for example, let's talk about the hold, holding another with the teeth. In both dogs and cats, this starts with the most gentle hold that adult animals will use when they're moving their young. Put a little bit more force behind those jaws, and we have play. Play biting, play fighting. It is perfectly normal in both dogs and cats. Feed a little bit more force into it, and in dogs, we have the displays that signal rank. So a dog who wants to communicate higher rank to another dog will typically grab that other dog high on the neck behind the ears or the other dog's muzzle. Again, normally, no injury. just communication. The female obviously doesn't want to harm her young. There's no advantage to beating up your litter mate, and in fact, any good adult will step in and discipline that kind of behavior. And there's no advantage to doing harm to your pack mate. Next on the list are reproductive holds in cats. The male typically grabs the female by the scruff of the neck with his teeth and holds her. And then the hold that has the most force behind it is the predatory hold. And this, of all of these other holds, is the only one that is guaranteed or designed to do serious damage. The others are just forms of communication. Where problems arise is when people don't realize this. When they don't realize that how much force a dog or a cat puts behind their jaws is determined by the amount of stimulation they receive from the target or the environment. In that case, we have naive people who engage a dog or a cat in play that causes the animal to grab and hold them, and then that person panics and starts screaming and carrying on, trying to pull away, feeding more stimulation, more motion, more sound into the encounter, and triggering the animal to grasp harder. At that point, the naive person then accuses the dog or the cat of being aggressive and being wrong, and sometimes they'll seek help. Or if their definition of what the cat or dog must do to please them has just been irreparably damaged, they'll give up the animal or put the animal down. But if you just look at the sequence, it's gorgeous, isn't it? It's that simple hold. We look at the dog's mouth and we see those four fangs as canines and we think weapons of mass destruction. What we don't think about is how those four fangs enable a dog to grab another animal and hold that animal and just exert four tiny points of pressure. And when that animal chooses to grab high up on the neck, or in the case of dogs with muzzles, the muzzle, what that does is protect the target from the crushing force of the molars and premolars, which I think is very, very cool. But when you feed a lot of stimulation in there, instead of getting those four points of pressure, which at most might cause bruising, or maybe as the stimulation in the environment increases, a small puncture wound, when it gets really serious, then we get tears, and the molars and premolars connect, and we get into serious injury. But the sequence itself is quite elegant. And we have our own sequences, have the seeds of energy efficiency within us. The only difference is, sometimes we lose sight of ours, but our animals don't.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.